Hello and welcome to this episode of The Broadcast. My name is David Brooks. I'm Head of Policy here at Broadstone. And this week I'm joined by my colleague Fiona White, who is Pensions Operations Manager based in our Bristol office. Hi Fiona, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Enjoying good. The hot weather for a change.
Oh, it's too hot, isn't it? By the time, who knows when this is going out, maybe it'll all be over. We'll all be thinking, yeah. It was never 30-odd, it was all right. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself first, just about how you got into pensions and why you're here?
Yeah, sure. So I joined Broadstone during 2018. I've been in the pensions industry, probably too long to remember, but just over 23 years. Over the years, seen various different levels of pensions administration. I started out as office junior, if I can call it that these days, and then moving through the ranks, pensions administrator, team manager, and as you just said, David, I'm now pensions operations manager, so oversee the administration department within the Broadstone Bristol office. So that's how I'm here.
Brilliant. Okay, so we thought it would be useful to just talk about something that doesn't really get much attention. Every now and again, there's sort of something that people think about, and it's, you know, that's important. You know, we're here member focused, you know, constantly trying to do the right thing for members. And, you know, it's those people that might need a bit more help, a bit more support when they come in contact with us. So the vulnerable customers is sort of a phrase that's probably coming over from the FCA world, vulnerable customers. We wouldn't necessarily call them customers, but vulnerable members or vulnerable people. And what we do to support them. So we're going to talk through a few of those things today. But I suppose it might be just to define what, you know, so people might have different views of what a vulnerable person might be when they're coming involved with the pension scheme. So if you can help us, Fiona, to understand, you know, how would you define a vulnerable customer / member?
Yeah, perfect. So FCA, they define vulnerable customers as someone who is, due to their personal circumstances, especially susceptible to detriment, particularly when a firm is not acting with the appropriate levels of care. So here at Broadstone, we're very mindful that there are many members in vulnerable situations who might not even consider themselves as being vulnerable. It's not something, you know, that you would like to necessarily admit or think of as your own sort of personal circumstances. But, you know, it's important that we do not assume vulnerability, though, in particular member, just because maybe they display a certain characteristic. There's a very fine line as to vulnerable, not vulnerable. So I guess there's a number of factors that could result in individuals being deemed as vulnerable. It could be considered anybody's health condition, experience of sort of recent life events, resilience, capability, that means that they're less able to sort of make those informed, important decisions than necessarily other people. Things that Broadstone consider sort of on the health side, physical impairment, hearing disabilities, eyesight, mental health issues, lifetime events is the obvious. You know, redundancy is a massive thing, especially in the last few years for our members. Bereavements that can pay a toll on people, divorce, illnesses linked with the health, you know, it's a big thing. And even something as little as a house movement, people wouldn't necessarily consider that, but, you know, with fraudsters out there now looking at addresses and posts going to old addresses, things like that, it's quite a key thing to consider. Financial difficulties, again, the redundancy links in with that, debt, sudden loss of income, and then the capability, what you'd expect, again, linked in similar to their health, poor eyesight, speech impediments, language barriers, and such like. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not limited to what I've just said. There's lots of things that could be accounted for. But when dealing with these members, as I said, it's a very fine line, not easy to identify. So we're always like looking at what people are saying, what they're doing, sort of what they're actually looking to do with their money, responses, and just general things that we may notice. Everybody's different. That's the really important thing for our administrators to remember when they're talking to people, corresponding with people. Everybody's different. So we don't do scripts. We don't have set questions. It's very difficult to kind of tease out information, but we would use appropriate conversational prompts to take that care when we're identifying our vulnerable members.
Yeah. Sorry, do you want to carry on? Sorry.
No, go for it.
No, I was going to say, what the common challenges that such a, I mean, that might be quite a long answer because, you know, it's quite obvious just from the sort of definition of a vulnerable member. there's so many different ways and reasons why you're vulnerable, why they're vulnerable, but what are some of the common challenges that those vulnerable people face?
Yeah, so I think one of the main things is fully understanding the risks that are involved. Not necessarily so much cost from our side of things, but the other end as well, when they've got financial advisors, if they're not necessarily legitimate or they're not on the register, the cost could be through the roof. And these people don't necessarily think that's anything out of the ordinary. They think that is quite ordinary. The implications of decisions, that's quite a big challenge, because again, if there's capacity issues, then they might not understand fully what they're doing and what the implication is then at the end of the day. Prioritising their own needs, all of these things, you know, they all feed back into the same kind of outcome, but understanding what their needs are, not just because somebody's cold called them and said, oh, you need to do this, we really think this would do this for you. But that's putting that little seed in their mind, and then that's, oh yeah, that is my need. So it's things like that, and just having the ability to assess, understand information that's kind of provided in a normal format. They may well need a face-to-face meeting with maybe a trusted party in with them, rather than written correspondence, for example, because again, some companies will be a lot of jargon in there. We like to keep it all clear, concise, to the point. But you know, that is what people are facing these days, I think.
Yeah. So you kind of touched on this, I think, in the first answer when you were talking about sort of the definition of what a vulnerable customer is. But how do we go about identifying vulnerable customers? You know, saying we don't have the scripts, we don't. So it's a little bit of, I don't answer for you, but you know, a little bit of intuition, a little bit of, you know, experience. But what else is out there that we can help, you know, identify these people?
So so if we're on the phone with people, we listen to them, we make sure like we're understanding what they're saying. So some things people might well say is sort of, I'm sorry, I don't understand. That again could be a simple phrase, but it's telling you that they're not understanding what you're saying, so we have to maybe rephrase it, or I'm struggling at the moment, changing their pitch or tone. Is there's little key points you can pick up on when you're truly listening to somebody. You might even notice things, sort of background noise, there's somebody else in there saying, oh, say this, ask this, do that. Those kind of things we need to make sure that we're aware of, as to, oh, is there somebody else on the call, are we on speakerphone? If they are, can you just confirm, you know, what their role is in this decision you're making. And again, delayed responses, that's whilst people are processing, it's just having that, how long to wait before the next point's going to come up, just making sure. So is there anything we want to clarify? Do you want me to go over that again with you? Just ensuring they're getting all the information they get. Support wise, you know, we do sort of consider whether they're able to understand it through those points, but there's always telltale signs. Again, suggesting that maybe they should have a third party, somebody who's trusted. So if they aren't getting or understanding what we're saying, then suggest we could look at like a online meeting so that we can have other parties involved. Suggest financial advice. Some people are very sort of reluctant to that, but you know, especially with the DB side of things in pensions, there is a requirement at certain levels of funds being paid out that they need that. So it's just making sure that they're getting all the information that will give them that informed decision-making process, and signposting, a massive thing. You know, think about the Money Helper and such like organisations. You know, where else can you seek advice, which actually free and partial advice that you can start as a starting point?
And so you're touching on it a little bit, but you know, what do we do directly to support them? You've kind of hinted a few times at sort of online meetings and chaperones, or you know, other people. You know, is that something that we do quite a lot?
Yeah, so we do. We offer different services throughout Broadstone, and you know, we've got employee benefits sections and different departments that can have those conversations. Which again, you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there is a certain element where it's sort of, you could have a free 30-minute conversation with somebody just to get those key points together and say, okay, let's do a bit more signposting. Let's say the best person you should speak to is looking at this organisation, or seek a financial advisor. You know, the list is all online. Find somebody that's suitable for your situation. The main thing as well, though, is again, just showing that you're listening to them, saying, oh, I heard you say, or you mentioned this. Let's talk a little bit more about that, just to delve a little bit deeper without directly asking or making people feel uncomfortable, normalizing the situation. You know, many of our members are in a similar situation. You know, these are our experiences, talking it through with them. Again, we're not regulated on the admin side of Broadstone, so they're very, very fine line as to what you're advising or not, but just talking something through with somebody can really help clear it up, and they hear things out loud and then they think, oh, okay, no, that's a bit of a red flag for me. I need to go and check something. So we just like to show them that we're here to help, give them the options. Like I said, signposting, a massive thing for us at Broadstone, so that they are fully informed.
It's something I think it's something the way Broadstone has changed over recent times, the way we've worked, you know, because it's one thing I've noticed just working with the admin teams that on my clients, because some of the efficiencies that we've been able to introduce for, you know, some automation across quite a few of our systems, it's something that's sort of a thread that's sort of running through a lot of your answers, is kind of having the time. And so if you have efficient systems, this does sound too much like I'm sort of saying how great Broadstone is, but if you have efficient systems, your staff, you know, the team can actually spend more time with the members on the phone, you know, because we don't have call centers. And so the member, you know, the person you're talking to is the person that would have written the letter to you in the first place. So I know exactly what they've said to you. And the member rings up, has a question. So they've got full information, but they've also got the time. You know, it's not that age old thing, you know, about, you know, going to the doctors on the NHS, you get 10 minutes and you've got one question. But if you go to, you know, some alternative therapies, perhaps they've got hours they can spend because you're paying them, you know, you can spend hours there talking to them. So, you know, and people feel good for that. So if you people give time, they're listening, and then you're more likely to pick up on those cues. You're more likely to have the time to be able to say, okay, well, let's try an alternate way of communicating with you that will fit your needs, or you say, signposting, taking the time to signpost. I think that's something that's just kind of a thread that's running through, is just having the time, not under pressure to move on. You know, I've written a letter to you, read it again. If you need help, find someone, bye. You know, that's not what you want. That's not the outcome that you want.
And we're not able to help in all situations, because sometimes, you know, there are other elements that are coming in which aren't financial related, pension related, but, you know, we can still signpost people to certain organisations, Citizens Advice, you know, mental health organisations and health, like, you know, physical health organisations. So it's really important that, like you said, we have that time and we've got the facilities to be able to do that.
Yeah. So also it helps to understand, I think, if you've got any particular, obviously anonymized, any particular sort of stories that where this has been, you know, gone well, you know, it's been led to a good outcome for the individual and us, I suppose.
Yeah. So the one actually that probably springs to mind is actually a member who was looking to do a transfer out, so move his pension to another pension provider, which, you know, fully acceptable. and at the point of reviewing it and looking at it, there were no red flags particularly present. But there was just something just didn't seem right. And if you're dealing with members, just purely written correspondence, emails, letters, things like that, then you won't necessarily get the full picture. So we actually contacted the member directly, spoke to them, discussed it in further detail and raised our concerns based on that conversation. Following that, we then spoke with the trustees as well, who in turn also carried out their duty correctly, and contacted the member, and did all of their necessary checks and things in the background too. And the transfer didn't actually proceed, and it did indeed turn out to be a scam. So we had stopped a high, but it was a high value transfer. It wasn't, you know, a smaller pot. It was quite a large pot. So we managed to stop that taking place, just purely because, again, that feeling, it just didn't quite seem right. And just taking that time out, let's speak to the member, let's not send another email because it could be anybody, you know, let's take that time with them. And it was successful. So it's things like that, because the member at that point, when he was trying to do the transfer, he didn't understand necessarily of it. He just, oh yeah, my money's going there, I'll get this, I'll get this return. But it wasn't that case at all.
Just, we did touch on it at the start as well. So the FCA introduced consumer duty, which doesn't directly impact our world, you know, officially, I suppose. But You know, does consumer duty and that requirement on providers impact what we do, you know, for the administration side of things?
Yes, I think definitely. So the new consumer duty came into force in July 23. And under that, it just ensures that all customers, regardless of their situation, background, capacities, receive like a good service and a good outcome. So whilst it's not directly linked to us, it definitely is. So like under the duty, we should aim to continuously address any issues that risk causing the consumer or members, any harm at all, any detriments. So we've recently developed our internal systems to further account for and to formally record, so we can report on it and get some details on it. Member vulnerabilities. So this highlights to all of our staff, so it's clear that whoever picks up the phone, whoever's dealing with a case, any additional needs that member may need to assist with their decisions or hard of hearing or adapting our correspondence to this larger format, for example, just to ensure that they're all of our members are receiving and understanding the information that's required. Alongside that, we review our processes regularly to take into account good practice, and for that's across the broad stone. So it's not just the Bristol office, we consider all other offices so that we're all working towards our one goal of the members receiving that service they should get. And that includes regulatory changes that not only affect vulnerable customers but everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I felt like you were hinting at it again, but what sort of training do we yeah. give to our teams?
So as with most companies these days, mandatory training. We've got quite a large suite now of mandatory training, which must be reviewed and updated and then completed by our staff at least annually. Vulnerable customers, it does form part of that suite. We have guides, face-to-face training with the teams, and there's like slides and other sort of notes and briefing notes that are to be referred to at all times. We also do expect our staff to complete the scan section of the Pensions Regulator Tool Trustee Toolkit. Whilst obviously we're not trustees, it's good for us to know the requirements from that angle too, so that we're dealing with it, we understand then what the process the trustees need to go to, so that we can provide them any information at the point of raising a concern with them, so they don't have to come back and forth and we can avoid delays and such like.
Yeah. So moving on to scams, I mean, we have touched on it again because it's a key point for vulnerable customers, you know, people being defrauded out of their pensions. What sort of scams are we seeing at the moment?
Sadly, criminals are becoming so much more sophisticated and it's a sad world out there when they can do things at a click of a button, a click of a mouse. But we're seeing that criminals are attempting to take advantage of maybe the greater flexibilities that are involved with pensions these days, as opposed to sort of, you know, 15 years ago. So I see if I can remember this. According to some research by an independent party, approximately one in seven UK adults have been subject to an attempted pension scam within the last 12 months. And that's quite a lot when you think that one in seven, if you know, a family could be six people, and it's a lot. So these people were generally contacted via unsolicited calls, texts, emails, with the aim of encouraging them to transfer or release money personally or from their pensions. They're scrupulous, they'll just try any way, shape or form. So they're getting these emails, which can seem pretty legitimate. Really, really tricky spotting scams coming in, to be honest. The stuff that we've kind of seen, you know, fraudsters are more sophisticated, as said. They create credible websites, they've got it all looking like an official website, all the official numbers and things on the bottom, and other tools and portals, apps, things like that. Letters in particular, I would say, are the hardest to spot. As an example, there's been previous letters issued from HMRC, which on Facebook looked exactly the same. Same letter, layout, formats, font, everything. The only difference was the contact number was ever so slightly, very similar to the actual number, but it's not like most of the email. And HMRC actually informed or like pension companies that, you know, watch out for this. This is going around. And so, yeah, so it was a scam that very difficult to spot, but luckily we did. Other things, I suppose, are personal emails as well, being hacked, and then they're sending emails to us, being the member, requesting us to make payments. And we have seen a noticeable increase of those kind of things.
Well, that's interesting. Sort of phishing, sort of impersonation.
Yeah.
It's probably a posh word for it. That is.
Yeah.
That's really concerning. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that one. My worry is about the sort of the scams where the scheme is a bona fide pension scheme.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it's registered with the HMRC and got everything it needs, but under the bonnet, the investments and the charges aren't fair, and so the investments will gradually just dwindle, and the people will just stop returning calls and disappear, and you've gone. And so it would have got through all the red flags. You know, nobody would have flagged it. No reason why anyone would have thought this wasn't a bona fide transfer, and the members might just not know for years. Because if they go, I've done this transfer, they get a couple of benefit statements, and then, oh, I haven't heard from you for a little while. Because people don't, do they? You know, that's the thing. They'll rely on that fact that people don't want to check in on their pensions all the time because it's boring and they've got other things to do with their lives. But that's, you know, that's the advantage they can take. So with regards to how we help those people, how do we help members understand where they might be being scammed?
So as I mentioned, the contacting members directly if anything doesn't seem right, that's kind of when we're at the stage of things actually proceeding. But before that, so we'll issue the scams leaflet with all like relevant correspondence, such as retirement quotations, transfer quotes, all signposted on our website as well and our member portals. And just generally, if we get a feeling that a member's thinking about a financial decision or looking to potentially do a transfer, we'll let them know on all general correspondence, you know, be aware of scams. These are the kind of websites you can go to check things, look at things appropriately. We remind our members for the need of financial advice. Like I said, for our DB pensions, it's, you know, set limits, but we would still suggest they take advice anyway, especially if they're unsure of anything or something doesn't quite seem right. But it's getting that correct level without being too over the top, but we have to be over the top to make sure that that people are aware that these things do happen, and it's ordinary people that do get scammed, and unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating, isn't it? Sometimes you feel like people get frustrated. The member will get, you know, you're standing between me and my money kind of feeling, and that's
it's
fair
my
enough.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah, I want it. You're stopping me from getting it, but that's sometimes in a sense, from my experience, has been a red flag in itself, not an official red flag, but, you know, because often the scammers will represent us as being a barrier. Oh, they're going to ask you about these questions. So annoying. That's not right, you know, and then it creates a them and us, you know, and the advisor, this, you know, bad advisor, bad actor, has got their arm around the member of figuratively going, oh, we'll get your money, don't worry, we'll get through this sort of thing. And they won't trust us. And that's a dangerous place to be as well.
Yeah.
And also, I suppose, I mentioned red flags then, but there are, you know, there are official red flags. So can you just talk us through the process for checking on those? Because they're the ones, if they're there, the transfer must stop, isn't it? The amber ones, you signpost to Money Helper and they get that. And that's, I suppose, that's fine in a way. It's just if there's just the odd thing that might look, the member might not appreciate about charges and some of the investments. But yeah, can you just talk us through the red flags?
Yeah, so when we do get to a point where somebody's going to or is looking to proceed with transfers or payments, things like that, first of all, we have thorough checklists specifically designed for looking for red flags so that we can record and audit anything that does pop up or flags that are present. And that's all based on the guidance from the pensions regulator. Any potential red flags that arise, we would then look to contact the member directly, talk through what they're trying to do, talk through the investments as example. Do they know where their money's going to end up? Were they cold called? We've got sort of quite a extensive, but not too intrusive, but enough that we can get the information that we need to make that assessment. And then we can establish what further actions we need to take. Where the members received advice, we'll do the necessary checks on the financial services register, just to ensure that advisor has got the appropriate accreditations to advise on that matter in hand. If not, then we'll query that again and say, you know, unfortunately, they're not authorised and regulated to give you advice on transfers, as an example. So we wouldn't be able to proceed at this time. So we'd need to get other information. They'd have to seek an official IFA to do that. Then the next step would be, so if we've identified all the red flags, spoke to the member, we're still not 100% sure that they're not red flags, we'll consult with the trustee, which is a key step. Like I said, ensuring that they're fulfilling their role. You know, if they haven't been informed, then they can't fulfill their duty. And at the end of the day, we all have the best interests at mind for the member. So that's kind of our process going through. But the key steps: check what we've got in front of us looks correct. If there's any flags, speak to the member, do the necessary assessment on the advisors that are involved, and then speak with the trustees, and then take it from there as to what further actions.
Yeah. Okay. So finally, kind of, you know, we can't rest on our laurels. As you've hinted, the scammers are going to be adapting, and we can always do things better. We can always learn from what we've done in the past to help vulnerable members that contact us. So how are we looking to improve what we do in the future?
Yeah, great. So we continuously review all of our systems, processes, training, literature. Like I said, we've got at least an annual requirement for doing these training sessions. We're aware that the FCA are looking to formalise and provide further guidance on the matters of scams and risks and things for members. And even though admin for Broadstone isn't regulated by the FCA, we will look to implement them as if we are. Best practice, basically. You know, if you're acting as if you're regulated, then you can't go wrong. The improvements on the identification verification as well. You know, what we're thinking about asking people, what we're accepting as verifying who they are, just to make sure that we are dealing with the right person. You know, I said personal emails, they get hacked so often. It's scary. And sometimes, you know, we get emails come through, oh yeah, I need money, I'm in so-and-so country, I forgot to do this. And it's a red flag straight away, because yeah, you wouldn't be expected that. But things like that, you know, just making sure that we are verifying who we're dealing with correctly. And especially with emails, our systems are sort of flagging up anything unusual, certain phrases, words, even like the spelling of words, you know, is it an American, is it English? So we'll also be looking to, aside from that, the potential use of AI with email scanning, because you know, AI is a massive thing. We won't get into that today, we could be here forever. But we, you know, we'll be looking at, you know, using AI to hopefully stop even further scams and emails that have been hacked coming through. The final thing, I suppose, which I would mention, is we're also looking at how we can implement the guidance on the on protecting identities during high risk events, so during pension withdrawals and things, which has come from the PASA management working group. That's right. That was issued in May this year, so hot off the press. So we're currently looking at how we can bring all of their thoughts and guidance into our systems and our processes too. So there's lots in the pipeline, and it's important. You know, this is a hot topic for not just pensions, but for any financial institute, I think. And it's crucial that we get this right for our members.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Okay. We have run out of time, Shona, but I'm sure you started you need to set the AI conversation off. That'd be a whole other podcast. We'd have still been here for another hour.
Next time, maybe.
But next time, yeah, next time we'll talk about AI. But yeah, no, thanks for filling us in on vulnerable customers, members, whatever you want to call them, and how we can help them and protect them from making bad decisions, I suppose. But okay. But thank you very much, Fiona.
My pleasure.